Life Audio.
Hey, welcome to the Happy Ramp Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio by my good friends, my partners in radio, Barnabas Piper and Ron Martin. Boys, we have a big live event coming up. Our live events are always big. They're huge. They're huge cultural events. Piper, tell the audience how they can be involved in this.
Well, the best way to be involved in this, audience, is to go to thehappyrant.com and to purchase your tickets for it. But I suppose you probably need to know when and where said event is. It will be April 18th, which is the Monday immediately following Easter, the Monday immediately preceding the last ever Together for the Gospel conference in Louisville, Kentucky. So our live event will be just across the river from Louisville in at Sojourn Church in, it's New Albany, is that right?
Correct.
I think that's right.
I think so.
So it's just across the river from Louisville, like a 10-minute drive from downtown. Tickets are $20. You can get them at thehappyrant.com. They are still available, will be available right up until the time of the event, 7 p.m., April 18th. The way these things work, we do a couple live recordings with the audience in the room, and then the last episode is pure interaction with the audience. So we set up a couple microphones, people come up and pose questions to us, which are the most wide-ranging, occasionally baffling, sometimes head-scratching, mostly awesome questions from listeners, and generally the best time. And then we just enjoy hanging out with you guys between episodes and afterwards, so come on out for that. It should be a blast.
Excellent, Pipe. Good promo work. You're not rusty at all. Have you guys listened to the program since we sold out a couple of weeks ago?
No, I've just listened to complaints from listeners who are like, Lowe's? I'm getting ads for Lowe's and Progressive Insurance now? So,
dude, I listened this morning, and it's hilarious. Yeah, they're just dropping ads in there. It reminds me of in Wayne's World. You guys remember Wayne's World where they sell out and they like sell the show to Noah Vanderhoof, the like Noah's Arcade guy, and they're dropping like doing ad reads in Wayne's World. It reminds me of that. It's a good time. But
my favorite was that something slipped through the filters on one of them, and so you know we released that first episode a couple weeks ago, and you know with the ad spots, and a listener hits us up and he thinks it's very funny. He lives somewhere in Louisiana. And was like, I just got an ad for a sports book at a local casino on your podcast. And I think it's amazing. Ooh. And I felt obliged to let Life Audio know that happened, because I'm sure that's not what they wanted to happen. But it warmed my heart a little bit to have. I mean, if we're going to sell out, let's sell all the way out, right? Let's go all the way.
Yeah, if we're going to sell, let's sell all the way out. I mean, Peyton Manning.
Casinos.
Yeah, Peyton and Archie Manning, who are basically angels. They can do no wrong. They walk on water. They're doing casino ads. So
I love how we think we can sort of mildly sell out. Like we had like a sellout. It used to be back in the day that a sellout was always a full sellout.
Dude, you know what's interesting though about selling out? I would say people who are, and I'm going to get this wrong, let's say 35 and under, they don't even know what that phrase means. Like, it means nothing to them. Like, it's not a concern.
They were like,
you know?
I was born with my soul in the devil's hands. I didn't sell my soul to the devil.
Might as well have the money, too. You know, like, selling out, like, not even a concern for a certain age person, which, I don't know, I find it kind of refreshing. Or maybe I'm just trying to justify the fact that we have finally sold out, which is a thing that we've been wanting to do for a long time. But speaking of selling out... elegant radio segue. something happened with Hillsong. There's a big Hillsong controversy. We're going to talk about it this morning, but Piper, give me like 30 seconds on this thing, because I know nothing about it.
Yeah, so the Hillsong thing has been sort of like showing its hand for a while, because there was the whole Carl Lentz thing where he got axed for inappropriate behavior a couple years ago. There was a situation where they closed their Dallas campus because of inappropriate behavior by the pastors there in terms of lavish lifestyle and accusations of sexual misconduct. I think there was a rape accusation there as well. And then in more recent months, there's been just a kind of a piling up of accusations against Brian Houston, who's the founder of Hillsong. So it started in, I think, the early 80s. Everything from kind of the bullying and control aspect, you know, an unhealthy culture in that way, and then some recent accusations of sexual misconduct of some kind. So he's now resigned. And so, you know, Hillsong, in our world, this reformed world, like, we really only think of Hillsong as we find the worship songs that they put out that we like, and we work them into our worship service, and we don't really talk about where they came from. But it's a worldwide kind of charismatic church phenomenon. Almost a denomination, network of churches. It's huge, millions of people involved. So this is, I mean, globally, this is a much bigger deal than just in the United States it is. And, you know, one more instance of a prominent church leader, or in this case, leaders, biting the dust because of leadership failures, sexual misconduct, financial mishandling of things. It's kind of across the board. Same things we've seen in recent years elsewhere. So that's kind of the banner overview.
Interesting. So I have a question about something that you just said. As a pastor, and you guys are both pastors, so if you're a new listener to the program, I'm the only non-pastor in the studio. Our other two hosts are men of the cloth. So if you're a pastor, how lavish does your lifestyle have to get before it turns on you? You know what I mean? Because, like, people like a certain amount of lavish, but then it's like, oh, too lavish. Like, I'd forgotten that Hillsong even had churches. I thought they were just like a music publisher. I didn't really even know what the whole deal was with Hillsong. But, you know, if lavish lifestyle is one of the talking points on this thing, Ronald, how lavish does it have to get before the tide's turning and people are mad at you?
Well, I mean, that's really the magic quest, you know.
It really
I mean?
Is. It's you like, want to know like how far you can go, but not
yeah,
too far.
I mean, yeah, totally. There's never been an answer to that. I mean, like, there's what I always find fascinating is that there's all of these unwritten rules in pastoral ministry in terms of like the level of lavishness a pastor is allowed to have. I always find it fascinating that, and again, I'm saying this because this is always the perception, right? Like, nobody ever is upset when a pastor has like a nice house. Nobody even like blinks an eye. But
as long as they get invited over.
As long as they get invited over. If a pastor drives a nice car, like, man, the judgments just start rolling out like mud. So we have these weird things where it's like even preachers and sneakers, right? It's like dude, you cannot have, like, if a pastor has a pair of tennis shoes that are $200 or more, like, something's wrong. Like, all the red flags go up and the radar is all blinking. So we have these things that are just, like, I guess because they're a little more visible and because they carry, like, a particular kind of, like, cultural, I don't know. You know, when you see somebody in a nice car, it means that they have money to burn, and it means that they live a more lavish lifestyle, and we expect more out of our pastors than that. In other words, we don't want to think of our pastors as being as materialistic as we are. Like, they're held to a higher and a different standard. And so, when you see, gosh, man, you know, when you see Carl Lentz, you know, like, you know, who's pastoring, you know, whatever, Hillsong Manhattan, and he's kicking it with Justin Bieber, and, you know, he's posting all these pictures of him at the gym with his, you know, with his abs, like, you know, bulging out to the moon. And you just, you know, and you're like, okay, so there's something about this, that there's an image that he's curating that's really important for him to get out into public consciousness.
Yeah.
And at the same time, he's a dude that's up there preaching like every other preacher on a Sunday. And you're like,
whoa,
so there's
something that doesn't
vibe with me about this.
Is it fair to say that he was A, preaching, and B, preaching like every other preacher out there? I have questions about
respectfully,
both halves of that statement.
He was just preaching like every other preacher wishes they could preach, which is to an audience
which
of
is
like
for
10,000 people in downtown Manhattan. So
right. So I wanna lean into that for a second. The thing that you said about the shoes and the thing you said about the car, is it so much pipe that people are mad about the shoes themselves being $200, or mad that their pastor is the kind of Ponzi preening individual that kind of showcases this aspect of themselves? You know what I mean? So
yes and yes.
Well, it's
okay.
It's a combination. So it's also there are kind of different swaths of Christianity. Like there is a whole culture of, and I don't want to pin it on the charismatic church, but it's you see it more in that realm where the sort of God's goodness to people is shown in material ways, sort of a health, wealth, gospel type of thing, prosperity gospel, which means that lavishness is actually, up to a point, a sign of God's goodness.
Sure.
You know, then you get like Creflo Dollar trying to raise money for a new jet, and you're like, see, this might have jumped the shark. But then there's the kind of our more sort of conservative, reformed-ish, evangelical world where, like, we feel guilty about lavish, but not opposed to it. We just need to explain it. So it's more like, hey, look at the new pair of Jordans a really generous church member just gave me. So we've announced that, A, we have Jordans, and we're that kind of person. B, I didn't spend any money on it. So there's sort of like that. There's this like guilt about showing off the things that we're enjoying or spending money on. I mean, everybody who has money burns $200 on something stupid at some point. It's just that, you know, normally it kind of quietly disappears. And I don't know why it's like, you know, if somebody's a collector of, you know, vinyl records or old books, you know, why is that significantly better than, you know, Michael Jordan's, you know, having every pair of Michael Jordans? I don't know.
We just create our own value categories. That's what's so like, even Pipe, what you just said, like, so it's not okay for the pastor to spend $200, but it's perfectly okay for a church member to have spent the $200 on the shoes to give to the pastor.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, there's no judgment there. That's not judgment. That's generosity. But if the pastor were to do it, it's like, it's judgment, because it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I mean, are we being good stewards with the money that we pay you? You know,
it's weird though to even think about that. Like, has a grown man who's not in your family like ever bought you a pair of shoes? You know what I mean? Like, do grown men give each other shoes?
My friend of mine bought me a pair of Jordans 2 years ago. I kid you not.
Well, that's the thing.
Ridiculous.
It's like they wouldn't buy you a pair of like Red Wing boots, but they would like. These particular style and almost collector's items, like Jordans are statement shoes. You know, most other nice shoes that like, so I love Red Wing boots. They cost about the same amount as a pair of Jordans. But they're not statement shoes. They're just like, I have two pairs and I don't need more than two pairs because they're going to last me for forever.
They're going to last me forever. Don't worry. I know I paid a little bit extra, but they're going to last me forever.
Which is my same justification for buying a Toyota 4Runner, which is not a cheap car, which is, don't worry, guys, I can drive this until I'm 50, which for me is still a couple years away. So you know, you kind of work in the justification of these things. When we talk about lavish lifestyles for these people, though, we're talking like, oh, we're not functioning in like conservative evangelical scales of lavishness. We're talking about charter jets and private island vacations and multi-million dollar homes and so forth, where it's like, oh, it's not just a question of like, are you living comfortably, it's a question of, are you abusing the donations to the church? Like it's almost into the realm of like, what's the word? They're basically almost like embezzling for personal use too, in a sense. It's just really public.
Interesting. Boys, let's take a break and then we're going to do a question about leadership.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
All right, boys. So here's my thing. So this guy, Piper, you said his name was Brian?
Yeah, Brian Houston is the founder of Hillsong.
He's the Dale of Hillsong.
Dude, most famous, like Christian Brian? Are there any other Brians even in contention?
Is Brian McLaren still considered a Christian?
Brian McLaren. Dude, it's crazy to me that that guy's name was Brian. You know what I mean? It didn't fit with the rest of his, like, I don't know, whatever his persona was. The name,
yeah, his
Brian
name should have been like Rocky McLaren. You know?
No, it should have been something real soft. You know what I mean? Like
Drew,
Trevor.
Drew McLaren. Evan.
Drew McLaren. You know, I don't know. Something real non-threatening. But anyway.
Trevor McLaren.
Trevor McLaren.
Even like, well, yeah,
Trevor
like,
McLaren's the guy Brennan, you your...
Brennan McLaren.
Yeah, Brennan. Yeah, Brennan McLaren. A lot of N's, but I like it. All right, so this guy, Brian Houston, you know, running this multi-billion dollar mega empire, flying on private jets, maybe allegedly a little bit of a jerk in the office. Like, I feel like, again, if you reach a certain level of success as a pastor, you're getting accused of being a bully. Is this true? And how successful do you have to get? Ronald, speak to this.
Oh, man, yeah, that's a great question, Big T. I mean, I think this is what happens, right? I think when the organization becomes, bigger, you know, the biggest thing in the room is the organization, mm-hmm. and then you have a face that represents the organization, mm-hmm. then all of a sudden now there's all of these systems that have to be in place to protect the organization, protect the person that fronts the organization. Now, because they have to protect the face of the organization, it means that face gets to start getting away with all kinds of different things, because if anything happens to him, it's going to put the organization into jeopardy. And mm-hmm. I think that's what you see when these things get to a place of like global status, like Hillsong. Everything goes into self-protection mode. So therefore, you know, power does funny things to people, mm-hmm. and it leads them down paths where it really exposes things in their life that have gone undealt with for years and years. And before you know it, you have a guy that is, again, like, you know, living the way nobody can reasonably or live, you know, healthily from, which is having that much power, having that much fame. And mm-hmm. then before you know it, he makes some pretty big mistakes. Uh-huh. And but now it's up to the organization to say, well, do we got to protect this guy? Because he's the face of our organization. And the primary thing is that we remain, you know, solid and valid as an mm-hmm. institution. And so it gets to this place where, man, this guy, in a sense, and I don't know all the ins and outs of Houston's situation, but in a sense, like sometimes these guys, they just get away with bloody murder, right? Because mm-hmm. no, I mean, man, you bring him down, you put the institution in jeopardy. And so you can almost get away with anything until somebody or some situation spirals out of control to the degree that now it has to be dealt with. Right.
Well, yeah, or unless the calculus is, can we make this guy the fall guy and the organization still lives on and everybody gets to keep cash and checks, you know?
Yeah, 100%. Like, that's when it flips to say, now yeah. this guy is putting us in jeopardy, but if we yeah. are able to, we have to let him go to actually keep the institution alive.
And right, we so can throw this guy on the altar, you know, slaughter him and keep going, maybe.
Well, and so then it's ministry, right? So it's really complicated yeah. because ministry is different than every other vocation because of the volatility, right? Like you can make all the same mistakes that Brian Houston made in any other, well, almost any other line of work, and it's not going to yeah. cost you anything. It's just going to make headlines. But in ministry, yeah. it eventually costs you your livelihood.
And it probably should, right?
Right. I mean, we have different standards for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So where's the organization now, Pipe? Like, are people still like hanging on to their shares of Hillsong? Is it gonna bounce back, or is it like a wrap for the whole thing?
It kind of looks like, you know, everybody is beginning to jump ship. There's a lot of large successful churches who are part of the Hillsong network. So they're not all mm-hmm. called like Hillsong whatever city. They have different names,
yeah.
but a lot of those are kind of pulling their affiliation. Which means they'll probably be fine. Mm-hmm. or they'll have their own little toxic subcultures. But since they're not plugged into the whole, they're not going to be investigated for it. I don't know. You know, it's probably a whole spectrum. Hillsong worship is probably going to... This is a total guess. This is not based on any information. I would just venture to guess that they will end up rebranding, changing their name to something else, and continue to do what they do. Because, I mean, they are one of the two or three most successful music producer, publisher, writers out there in terms of popular music. Mm-hmm. The only question there is, like, who owns the intellectual property? You know?
Yeah.
Is it a situation like where Hillsong, the church, owns that? They make the majority of the money off of it, et cetera? Because if so, then there is sort of an interdependence on one another to continue to survive. It's hard to see Hillsong surviving as Hillsong, given all of this. Also, to what end? Like, why is it beneficial for Hillsong to continue to exist as is instead of... But, I mean...
Yes.
But Ronnie made the point earlier, things become about self-protection, self-preservation, which means that people are not thinking rationally. They're not thinking wisely. Wisdom here is, organizational health, lack of health, like genuine abuse going on, all sorts of misconduct, we need to tear this thing down and clean out the mess and maybe rebuild or maybe become something else. But that's not how anybody thinks. Everybody's like, what can we preserve out of this? That is always how human nature thinks. And so it's easy for me to say from the outside, they should just tear it down and do something different. Likely that won't happen and it'll be kind of a slow fizzle.
Well, but I think you're thinking about it like an actual pastor would, which is a good impulse for you to have. So, like, kind of real granular, how do you prevent this from happening? Like, because there's an ego kind of fallen human heart aspect to this, where if left to our own flesh and our own devices, we would all probably like engineer some version of this for ourselves, where we're just getting gradations more rich and famous. So as a pastor, how do you guard against this happening, knowing that, like, you know, neither of you are in churches or empires that are going to become this big, but, like, just on a conceptual level?
It seems to me that you don't need to guard against it if you take the role of pastoring really seriously, as opposed to the role of builder, CEO. Pastoring is shepherding a flock, you know, and we just love to rationalize, well, my flock is global. No, it's not. That's not a flock. That's not what that is. That is, you know, that's a network. But if you look at it and you think about where the Bible says, you know, shepherd the flock of God that the Holy Spirit has given you, the flock of God that is among you. Well, that kind of gives a definition of, like, oh, I have this group of people who I'm supposed to be pouring myself into, teaching, leading, shepherding, discipling, being accountable to, etc. If you do that, I don't see a lot of risk of the, you know, pride is always a risk in our hearts, but I don't see the risks of fame and wealth and fortune. Now, of course, there are a lot of small church pastors who are bullies, who are abusers, who are a lot of things, but I don't know. Like, it doesn't feel like a risk for me to say, oh, I don't need to fend off global fame and the risk of the lavish lifestyle. Like, no, I'm just one of the pastors at a mid-sized church who gets paid a fair wage to live normally. And my calling is to care for a certain group of people. I more and more, I have become uncomfortable with the idea of calling large network leaders pastors. Because I don't think what Brian Houston was doing was pastoring. I think we've twisted the title of pastor to be, you know, it's a spiritualized CEO, a spiritualized president of an organization. If he was just called the president of Hillsong Network, I would his actions wouldn't be any more defensible, but I would at least feel better about, like, the accuracy of who the man was and what he was doing.
Interesting. Ronald?
Yeah, no, it's hard to disagree with any of that. You know, I think it's, you know, it's funny. So my, ironically, my my worship guy, my worship pastor, graduated from Hillsong in Australia 7-8 years ago. He went through the whole program. And so he's pretty devastated right now because he actually knew some of these guys that he had a lot of personal interaction with them. And so, you know, to him even, like, he's surprised, you know, because he had a relationship with them that, you know, he would have said, well, I felt like I knew these guys and I don't like the way they're responding as an organization to what's going on. There's a lot of cover up and a lot of self-preservation going on. And so it's funny because we just talked about this yesterday afternoon and, you know, it kind of, as soon as you see more and more prominent leaders fall, you know, the first thought is, man, can anybody be trusted? I mean, is everybody hiding something? Is it all a sham? Is it all a farce?
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's just, it's like, it's not, right? You know, we see these prominent, you know, we can count on two hands prominent leaders that have fallen in the last couple of years. And you go, well, no, they just get all the attention. It's the thousands upon thousands of faithful pastors out there that don't get the attention, that don't have the platform, that are, you know, imperfect people, but they're being faithful and they're, you know, they're living out their faith as they're pastoring people. And I think to Pipe's point, I mean, regardless of the size of your organization, you have to surround yourself with people that you have true accountability to, you know, that are willing to say, hey, I'm seeing something in your life that's concerning and I love you enough to talk to you about it. Even if it means that you're in a place of power where you could fire me for saying that, my call is to surround myself with people that I can create a culture with that they're not afraid to say, dude, what's going on and what are you doing? And are you okay? And, you know, can we talk about your life? Can we talk about the example that you're setting for your congregation? Like, are you somebody that is shepherding the flock, but not under compulsion? And to just keep ourselves in particular scenarios and keep ourselves within cultures that are being built where, hey, you know what? Everybody can get sidetracked, you know, with all kinds of temptations. Do we have people around us that are helping us in that, you know? And I think when you get to institutions that are that big, like Pipe was saying, I mean, we're not talking about a lot of pastoring going on anymore. We're talking about a lot of other things, and it's easier to slip through the cracks and lose yourself. And I think that's, you know, and that can happen in a small organization as well, right? I mean, it's not necessarily the size. The size makes it a lot more difficult, though, I think, you know, than it would be for, you know, a guy in a church of 50 people can screw up just as bad as Brian Houston.
Yep.
But it's going to look a lot different.
You know? Sure.
Well, I think there's, you know, I think about like size of organization is the easiest thing to point at because all of these prominent failures are from large organizations. I think the flip side of that is what Ronnie said, which is that large organizations make them prominent. I don't know that there is a greater likelihood of pastoral failure in a large church than in a small church. There is a greater likelihood of everybody knowing about it.
Right.
You know, I was on a podcast maybe a year ago with some guys who came out of the independent fundamentalist Baptist world. Like the kind of thing where there's whole Twitter accounts dedicated to like the crazy preaching clips of these guys. I mean, it's a whole weird world, primarily small churches. And let me tell you, just as prone to pastoral failures, sexually, financially, definitely bullying, etc. They're just churches of 80 people in like the hills of Kentucky and North Carolina, so nobody knows about it. What stands out in my mind when it comes to things like how do you faithfully pastor in a large organization is somebody like Billy Graham, who he wasn't a pastor. He wasn't pastoring a congregation, but he was faithfully preaching the gospel for decades. And if you go back and look at the ins and outs of his personal spiritual life, it was everything Ronnie just said. There were people close to him who held him accountable. He intentionally just threw himself on the ground, quite literally, before the Lord with regularity. His humility, his prayer, his knowledge of his own sin, you know, the Billy Graham rule, the way that he would just not be alone with a woman, has been panned often. I think we've even made fun of it to a degree on here. But for somebody in a public status like that, who's trying to avoid the appearance of evil, the accusation, anything that would besmirch the reputation of him or the gospel, there's wisdom in it. And you look at that and you're like, yeah, it can absolutely be done. The man faithfully and without moral failing led people to the cross week after week, day after day for decades. probably preached to more people than anybody alive today has. Probably, I mean, I don't even think that's a question. And so, yeah, how do we avoid it? The formula is pretty simple. The faithfulness is really hard, is kind of what it comes down to.
Right. No, that's a good word.
I think it's too, I mean, to add to that real quick, I think, you know, we all carry our own power dynamic, and it's, you know, in what is, you know, what is the Jesus way of, you know, of living out the Christian life, but diminishing our own power. And, you know, it is going to be easier for somebody in a for a guy like Brian Houston, who's in the position he's in, or a Carl Lentz. I mean, power does funny things, right? So I am not like, I'm not faced with that, you know, in a small to mid-sized church. I have a certain kind of power, but it's, you know, it's not to the level that a Brian Houston has, which is going to come with its own set of implications and temptations. But what I do have is my own set of my own power dynamic, given the environment that God has placed me in. And it, you know, and the way to live out, I would say, you know, the way to live out the way of Jesus is to always be constantly, you know, doing things to diminish that power, be aware of that power, be aware how it affects other people, be aware how it affects you. And again, what is pastoral ministry but living out the humility of Christ to a localized group of people that he's given you? And that takes a ton of effort. It takes a ton of, like Pipe just said, you know, going before the Lord and you know, being prostrate every once in a while, or more than every once in a while, and saying, Lord, you know, a wretched man that I am, you know, like, help me. I can't do this. This is too much for me. I have a church of 40 people. It's too much for me, right? I can't even handle the power I have if I have a church of, you know, 40 people. It's overwhelming. It's too much. I need you to intercede. I need you to humble me. I mean, that's the call right there. It's going to just be harder if you're Brian Houston.
Yeah. It's so striking to me that, I mean, you were just talking about the way of Jesus, which is probably an easy phrase to overlook because it just kind of rolls off the tongue. But one of the last things that Jesus said, you know, he was arrested and he looks at them and he goes, I could call down 12 legions of angels right now.
Right.
He basically is like, you would all be finished if I chose to use my power.
Yeah.
But instead, I'm going to take up my cross. I'm going to bear the beatings, and I'm going to quite literally lay my life down for you. That's more the call of the pastor. Not that we have 12 legions of angels, but we might have 12 legions of deacons or spiritual authority that we choose to wield or whatever. And we say, that's not what this is about. This is there is a taking up of the cross for the sake of other people, leading them to the cross. And you know, and Jesus exemplified it. He said it out loud. I mean, it was this is the calculus of salvation. I could call down 12 legions of angels, but I'm going to lay down my life. Go, you know, follow suit, spiritual leaders.
Yeah. Good stuff, boys. Good work. Let's take a break. When we get back, I want to run a quick etiquette question by you guys. All right, boys, so here's the setup. Had some overnight company at the house. Great people, listeners to the program. The guy's a man of the cloth. And we spent a couple of really great days together. But they were long days, and they were very people-heavy days, in as much as I was teaching all my classes, having meetings, doing all the usual stuff, and then we would hang out kind of late into the night as couples together. And one of the nights, I had been hanging out, you know, we were out in the smoke room, we were laughing, having a good time, and I left the room, and I'm an introvert, right? So I have a, like, there's a top up for me on all this where, like, I just, even if I'm having fun and it's a great hang, like, I just get enough of it. So I left the room, I came into my office for a couple minutes just to, like, answer some emails, kind of be alone, and I was watching some tape. I was watching like an offensive lineman that I like. And the next morning, my buddy comes out and he's like, hey, he's like, was everything okay last night? You know? And I'm like, yeah. But he was, I don't know if offended is the right word, but he was concerned that I had left the room and I hadn't sort of announced what I was doing. My question to you guys is, like, did that require an explanation, or like, as an introvert, how much are you allowed to get away with? before you have to explain things. What do you guys think?
I mean, an explanation is always nice.
I mean, is it in the contract, though, that, like, I have to keep hanging out until the last dog is hung? You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I mean, it's your house, you're hosting, there's a social contract, an unspoken, yeah, unwritten social contract there. So I would say if you need to bail because you've just reached your peak, I would say, you know, saying, "Hey guys, I'm going to shut it down for the night," or, "Hey, I need to step away for about an hour. I got to take care of a couple of things here." I always feel like just the announcement of that. I mean, because here's the thing. Do you want to have that conversation that you had on the back end? It's probably better if you just sort of explain it.
Here's the thing, though. I don't want to have it at all. You know, I don't want to have it on the front end. Like, and I thought about it in the room, and my thought was doing some kind of announcement. The thought of doing that exhausted me even more. So I just skipped it. But I think I should have probably done it. And I'm not coming at my guy here. He's, if he's listening, Tyler, great dude, really sensitive dude, good pastor, right? Like, really dialed into people's emotions.
I was going to say, the fact that he thought to ask means that he's a little bit more clued into sort of how might people be feeling about things than many folks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have thought it was kind of weird that you just ditched.
Yeah, but you're an extrovert. You know what I mean? You would have sat there and, like, talked until 2 a.m. probably.
No, yeah, for sure. And I would have been in, so I'm married to the introvert of all introverts too. So like, I have a little, like, I have that dynamic. I'm living with that dynamic all the time. But
sure.
I mean, to me, it's like, dude, why didn't, you know, just to ghost it, you know, it's like, you could have just say something. Just, that's cool. Just say, you gotta go.
Yeah.
That's all right.
I think finding those neutral phrases that announce your departure, but don't open the door for a conversation, like Ronnie's suggestion of, "Hey, I got to go take care of a couple things. I'll be back in a bit. Uh-huh. Hang tight, just chill." That works really well, because, like, taking care of a couple things could be decompressing my brain in silence for 30 minutes, you know?
Right.
But it puts the other person in a position of guilt free. You know, they didn't chase you off. Because one of the weird, so I'm obviously, I lean more extroverted. One of the weird dynamics between introverts and extroverts is that it's not a moral neutral. Uh-huh. Introverts resent extroverts often, you know, because we suck up all of the air in the room and we, you know, hold you captive in conversation for hours on end, and we will shut the bar down and that kind of thing. And you're like, "No, I'm tapped out 3 hours ago and yet I'm a hostage here." And so there's sort of a resentment. And so keeping it morally neutral but allowing you the space you need makes total sense to me. Unless you have...
Yeah, I think you can do it. I think you can do it and feel good about it.
Unless you have the kind of friendship where you just, like, they know you well enough to be like, "Oh, Ted's doing that thing where he's got to go get some quiet for a minute." And then they don't even think about it again. It's just Ted doing that thing.
Yeah.
But that's a pretty rare kind of understanding in a friendship, I think.
Yeah, and I think we're early enough in this friendship. It's kind of like we're still dating. You know, we haven't been together long enough to, like, really know each other at that level. But yeah, good input, boys. I was just curious.
Well, it's an interesting question, because my younger daughter leans more introverted. And so, like, when she's around a bunch of people who she's not close with, yeah, her emotional reserves tap out real quick. She's also 13, which means that she doesn't have sort of the maturity and patience to bear this out. So this is an ongoing conversation between the two of us of, like, how do you navigate this politely so that people don't just look around and go, "Where did you go? Why did you just disappear?" Yeah. That kind of thing. And it's, you know, and it's tough for her to be like, "What am I supposed to do? Like, tell everybody I'm going to my room?" I'm like, just quietly be like, "Hey, I'll be back in a minute." Just sort of a, like, letting people off the hook kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Ironically, Ronald just left the show abruptly, kind of with no explanation. It initially, the word was he had a hard out at 8:30, but I think he was enjoying the last conversation so much that, like, the hard out became much softer.
That's an extrovert's hard out, which is, I'm reserving the right to leave at this time, but if it's fun, I'll hang out for a while longer.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what it is, for sure. We should probably close this up, Pipe, you think?
Probably a good idea.
Did a quick Patreon?
Yeah.
Pipe, we've done what we always do, in that we have presented a conversation so engaging to Ronald that he stayed a little bit longer before then leaving. And until next time.
We want to take a moment to thank the team at Life Audio for partnering with us on this podcast. Be sure to go to lifeaudio.com and take a look at the other podcasts in their network. They've got shows about prayer, Bible study, parenting, and more.
I'm Don Hawkins, inviting you to be encouraged with my weekly podcast, Encouragement for You. To subscribe, go to lifeaudio.com.